T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and lift off.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the tire.
Gold is your place to come to where you as a listener can find advice, tips and strategies to help you overcome life and business challenges, just as my guests have done so. Today we have a very special guest and we're talking to Amanda Hoffman. Hello and welcome, Amanda.
Hi Tan, how are you?
I'm great. Now Amanda, you are a BAS agent and a bookkeeper with a huge twist. Tell us about the little twist you've got.
Okay, so back in 2013, I wanted to learn about this thing they called social media. I had no idea what it was. And I made the decision that I was going to learn from the best of the best. So I flew to the first ever world conference of the social media marketing world. And I learned all about this thing called Twitter. And I also discovered that there was a whole new world and it opened to me. And that's where my journey began with interviewing people on Twitter, making new friends. I started down the road of blogging, podcasting with yourself. And also I fell in love with Pinterest and basically ended up with 11,000 followers. So it's been a pretty fast forward kind of experience from knowing nothing to today knowing quite a bit about everything.
Yes, and so that's a very that's a lot you've done in just a short time of 3 years. So because really a BAS agent and a bookkeeper, mixing those two with all the creativity of the technology world in terms of social media and blogging and podcasting, how does that work? Are there many of you actually out there doing what you do?
There haven't been in the past. I was pretty unique, but I have noticed that there's some up and rising stars. So Stephanie Hines is somebody that actually has social media intertwined with her accounting firm. So she has yellow band, red band, black band, where she helps small business people go up the bands. So they're not just learning about their taxation and their and bookkeeping and accounting skills. She's also intertwining that with social media training. So there's a lot of up and coming individuals who are using creativity along with the logic to be able to give a more holistic service for their clients. But we're still not a broad kind of situation. Most accountants in particular are the ones that are lagging significantly behind in social media. Bookkeepers certainly are embracing technology quicker and being much more innovative than the older school type accountants. And I suspect a lot of that is because many accountants are an older generation. Myself being in my early 40s, I'm actually one of the young ones. The majority of accountants tend to be the baby boomer age.
Wow, that's really interesting. So do you think it's they find it really difficult? I mean, you live in that world, you speak to a lot of accountants and people in the financial sector. How difficult is it for people who are a lot older to actually adopt technology?
It's very challenging. I mean, in the accounting world, the first thing they will say and ask to me, and this is a reoccurring theme at any conference I go to, is what do you earn from blogging? Mm. So that's your first block. They want to know, well, if you sit down and you're doing three blogs and it takes you 3 hours, well, where's your return on investment for that? Where's the financial money ka-ching, ka-ching into your bank account? So that's their biggest block because as an accountant, everything is about billable time. So when you talk about social media, you talk about blogging, they see that as a waste of time because it's not putting tangible dollars in their bank account.
Right. So they obviously also have a mindset. Now, in a true entrepreneurial mindset, it's you're not always sitting there going, okay, I'm going to make X amount an hour. A lot of entrepreneurs are more about, oh, I'm going to do the project. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to get my blog out. I'm going to get sponsorship. They're not looking at it from that very straight and narrow, this is how much I have to earn per hour, and this is my service that I'm going to provide to earn it. So it's a very different mindset, wouldn't you say? How do you adapt to that?
The accounting side of things, we all have to realize that the way we do things, where we'd sit down and do data entry, where as an accountant we would have hourly billable time, this is going to be in the way of dinosaurs over the next 5 years. So we've got the challenges of the online digital world. The ATO is well aware of the shift, and that's why they are spending millions of dollars to upgrade their technology and their interfaces to embrace a digital age. And they also understand that business people are very time poor. So they're doing innovative things such as having callbacks at 6 o'clock at night, offering free tax advice, assisting small business with sharing their screens even, which they don't advertise. They may not like me saying that, but you can actually, as a small business person, if you're earning a small amount of money and want to save having go to an accountant, the ATO does offer you a screen sharing service where they'll talk you through how to use My Tax and how to lodge your tax. So there's a lot of innovation there happening in the ATO. The issue that I'm seeing is because we've got an aging population when it comes to tax, a lot of them are looking at the old school where you have MYOB desktop, you don't use the cloud, everything's billable hours, you have staff and they have their duties and you book everything by the minute. But there are many accountants now, particularly with such ones like Melanie Power, the ambassador, the international ambassador of Xero, Rod Drury. Xero's really started to make different companies, like particularly MYOB, wake up. And 18 months ago, MYOB realized that they were lagging behind. And so they've pulled their finger out and they've become innovative. So all of a sudden, there's this awareness that the digital age is here. It's not going to go away. Artificial intelligence is getting more sophisticated. Algorithms are getting more clever and intelligent. And all this is then making a lot of more the bookkeepers, they're the ones embracing the technology and the digital age more. The accountants, and I'm talking overall, there are exceptions to the rule, and these people are exceptional, but the ones that are still learning and thinking about where the value add is for them, they're all in the process of just coming to grasp. So for our industry and the financial world, it's extremely exciting. It's like year 2000 bug, but in the financial world, about embracing paperless office, innovating with our time, having fixed fees, and then trying to work out how we're going to price these and package these up to be able to help small business people to the largest extent possible.
Now, Amanda, something that comes to mind is, what about human contact? Because you said paperless office, I know there's a lot of these days you have DocuSign, so you don't even have to actually go and see your accountant anymore and have a chat about figures or anything. You just, everything's done through email and it gets sent to you electronically signed, sent off to the tax office and your checks in. It's almost like you don't even know anymore who you're actually dealing with. So where does the human contact come in, and is it necessary? Especially for the older people in the financial sector who are used to that, would they miss it? Do they need it? Is it necessary as us as humans? What are your thoughts on that?
going forward, this is where the innovation's going to come. We may have a lot of digital tools, and they're just tools, to be able to streamline our administrative side. But the human contact is where we become indispensable. So as we go forward, I believe it's going to revert back to the time of our grandparents and our great-grandparents, where we're going to, rather than focus on technology, we're going to focus on good old-fashioned customer service. Because at the end of the day, if you think about personalizing your service, I'll give an example. I had a referral come to me because his books were a mess. They were significantly unbalanced and they weren't being reconciled correctly. So that's where the human contact came in. I was able to sit down and discuss exactly what the issue was. I was then able to fix the problem. We were able to communicate by email and also our phone conversations. And then the end result was everything was balanced to the dollar. He was really happy and put at ease, and the stress levels dissipated. And I was able to give him a very personalized service, even though we've never met in person. So this is where, as bookkeepers, accountants, and even financial advisors, we all have to make ourselves indispensable by focusing on our clients' needs, providing them solutions that are valuable to them, but also catering it to their personality type, and also focusing in what's important for them. And that's where I believe that we're going to have a much better customer experience for our clients, because we're going to have to revert back to the old school customer service.
That's really interesting. It's almost was sort of coming the full circle without coming away from technology, aren't we?
That's right. So I think the secret here is use technology by all means to streamline and reduce our administrative side, but that then should give us more time to focus on the personal needs, the goals that our customers want to achieve, and go into more an advising point of view, where we're almost like a business coach / mentor, where we gain our benefit and our customers see our value by us helping them recognize what their ideal customers are, understanding what their goals are, and then helping them provide solutions to achieve those goals so that their success becomes our success.
That's very nicely put. I really like that. Now, let's go over to social media, because you are a bit of a social media guru, and you are in particular a great social media advocate for the financial sector, which is your niche market. So tell us, how did you actually grow 11,000 followers on Pinterest? Because that was done in a fairly short time, wasn't it?
Well, basically, I figured being a bookkeeper, using a visual tool like Pinterest would be quite a challenge. So I made a decision that I would deal on topics that I loved. So initially, I didn't deal on tax or on bookkeeping at all. I focused on my love of Twitter. And so I went through and I looked for articles on the internet that interested me as a business owner, on how to use and connect and network and make relationships and engage with people on Twitter. And then I shared those all into a folder. So they were all verified links. I knew exactly that they were working. The information was valuable to me because it was practical. And that's what I focused on. And of course, that grew. So then I ended up getting ATO website, and because the ATO back then was very boring, back in 2014, it was very, very boring. So I made really nice pictures, and then I attached the links to it. And then I started sharing articles such as, you know, 4 tips for a reluctant business owner to do his bookkeeping. And that has been my most popular pin on my Pinterest account, which has been shared all over the world. But what was interesting was the people that I were following, I must have stumbled across somebody that was in Pinterest itself, because what I discovered was that they started recommending my Twitter folder for other Pinterest users to actually follow and to pin. And this is where I end up gaining thousands of new followers in a week. And then because I had all these new followers, I then made sure that I didn't stop with my pinning. I was very disciplined. Every 15 minutes, every day, I would find valuable articles that either I'd written or other people had written about my niche market. And eventually, and that was over a, it was over a progression then of six months that I am with 11,000 followers, and I've maintained that now to today. I haven't tried to grow them. I've been more focusing on getting click-through rates, click-throughs to my website so that I can then target my ideal customers.
That's awesome. So would you say then that you have actually you've actually gained not only followers, but have you gained actual customers that you've converted simply through Pinterest or social media?
Back before I reduced my my bookkeeping business because of family obligations, I was getting about 25% of all new customers from social media. So they were a combination mostly of Twitter and LinkedIn in particular were my two main areas where I would get customers. I know there's one client has come from Pinterest. As to the rest of that, I was still learning about analytics, so there may have been others. But what I believe is Pinterest may have actually brought my name to people's attention that normally wouldn't have found me. Then they, because my link to my business Facebook page, they then read and follow me and like me on my business Facebook page. And then from that, they then go and become a customer, or in some situations I know that they've actually referred me to friends who have become customers.
So would you say to people who are actually out there and they're trying to grapple with the idea of how I can use social media in my business, in one sentence, how would you sum it up for them?
Think what is valuable to your customers, and then focus on that theme on your social media.
And to use basically social media as an advertising tool to promote yourself, promote your business, just back in, like back in the days, I guess if we use the analogy of right now, a lot of people have a home office or basically a virtual office. They can work from anywhere in the world. And whereas many years ago, you had to have that brick building. You had to have the shop front. You had to have a street presence. And the way you advertised then was either billboards or newspaper, magazines, your local paper, you know, shop front, people getting traffic from people walking past. And now it's a really completely different way in when you talk about marketing. And social media, I guess, is one of those tools that is almost like your billboards or your, you know, directing you to your shop front in the virtual world and, you know, getting your name out there. So I find it really, really interesting that you actually, and I've heard this from a lot of people, that LinkedIn and Twitter are your two main areas that you would be getting conversions from.
Well, I think the biggest thing, okay, so I'm going to bring out a warning label here, is that anyone who does social media needs to understand, have to have focus. So if you as a small business person don't know who your ideal customer is, if you haven't sat down and named them. So for me, I've got four ideal customers, but in one area, I'd say there's Bob. Bob is completely hopeless. He doesn't organize anything. When he pays for the fuel, he forgets to ask for a tax invoice. He hops into his truck. There's wrappers, there's dockets, there's unopened mail, and it's scattered all over the place. And when it comes time to do his bookkeeping, Bob has to go all around the house, all through his truck, into his drawers, just to put everything all together. And quite often he's got to get on the bank and call the bank to send him out some bank statements because he's got no idea because he's misplaced them. And then his wife, Jill, is the one left to do the bookkeeping, and Jill does not want to do his books. She has other things to do, but she begrudgingly will do the books for Bob just so that she can get more time with him and the kids on the weekend. She doesn't enjoy it. She doesn't quite know what she's doing, but she's got the basics. But she could really enjoy a pedicure and be doing that instead of doing the books. So I know that that's pretty much what these two people is. And from thinking like that, I know that they've got kids. I know that they've got sport events. I know pretty much where they'd be shopping. I know that Jill's going to be on Facebook, that she's using Pinterest, and that if she's on Twitter, she uses it more to connect with people in her industry if she's career-driven and got a full-time job. So these are the things that anybody in small business needs to do first before they even start on a social media plan at all. If you don't know your ideal customer by name, there's no way in the world you're going to be able to do social media. And as a great online mentor of mine, Pam Moore, says, you're just doing RAMs, which is random acts of marketing, and it doesn't work. And that's where you'll get the small business person who go, this social media, it doesn't work. And it's because they haven't taken the time to first think of who their ideal customer, then work out on a list, and you could do this for 2017, do a list about all the pain points that your customers might be experiencing January, February, March, and just do that for the entire year, and then write down what the things they hate or the things that frustrate them. And then from that information, you can then now begin to look at blogging articles that are valuable to them, being able to share it on social media, and then being able to know what sort of images you need to use to get their attention. So I think this is the biggest problem. People think social media is a magic bullet, and it's not. It's a lot of hard work. And anybody that does branding or does social media management or scheduling or strategies will tell you that a lot of small business people know they have to have a social media presence. But there's so many individuals out there that I call gurus who really are just taking their money. They don't help them on a personal level actually see who these ideal people are, structure a strategy, and then work with it. And you don't need to be on social media all the time for people to find you. If you have valuable content that appeals to your ideal customer, they will find you. And that is where you're going to get the conversions into customers.
I think that's very, very well said, Amanda. And coming back to your ideal customer, I know I was working with someone yesterday teaching them the very basics of setting up a Facebook ad. And when we talked about their ideal customer, now they didn't know. They really couldn't drill down. They said, oh, yeah, small businesses. So yeah, but who in small business? Because there's a lot of people in small business. And we had to actually sit down for about 45 minutes and actually sit down and map out, just like you did with Bob. We had to map out an ideal customer. We came up with two. But until we did that, we could not go ahead with the Facebook ad because we didn't know what interests to put in. We didn't know what specific demographics to put in. We didn't know what age group to put in. And it would have just been pure guesswork. So I love the fact that you have brought that out and actually mentioned that as being something that is the fundamental of social media in particular. Now, speaking about social media, you actually generated a lot of support from your online community through a very, very difficult personal time for you, didn't you?
Yeah, it was quite, because by nature I'm very reserved, so I'm not a sort of person that tells everybody about what's going on in my personal life. So about 18 months to 2 years ago, I had the predicament where my husband's parents, their health was failing, and I was very, very close to his parents. And unfortunately, my husband's mother, her health deteriorated to a point that left us all in shock because she ended up passing away. And I took this very, very hard. So when I was genuine, because I think what we've got to realize is social media is not just an avenue where we use to try to get work. It can be an avenue where you can actually find genuine, wholehearted support. So I found my community on Facebook really did lift me up when I was pretty down. You know, I had individuals who I had not seen since 2013 when I was overseas, where they would Skype call me or they would ring me on the phone and they would say, "Hey, Amanda, are you okay? Is there anything we can do? Do you need to talk?" I actually even had a complete stranger who specializes in bereavement give me a call and say, "Hey, how about I ring you up after work, 11 o'clock at night tonight, and just give you a chance to have a talk with me." And that was a very unexpected situation that I found, that when I was in the depths of grief and mum was dying, that all these strangers who I only knew from Facebook end up being my support network. And I've got to be honest, if it wasn't for their support, their generosity in wanting to spend time with a complete stranger, I honestly don't think I would have coped as well as what I did. So that was something that I found incredibly, I just was amazed. It just blew me away that people could be so kind and take time out of their day to help somebody that they really didn't know, apart from having your profile on Facebook.
Wow. That's really, really powerful. So how long had you had the online community? Was it your online community or was it a group that you were part of? Or take us through how you actually started with an online community in the first place.
Well, the one thing that I did when I started a business and discovered Facebook was I made a decision that I would have a public profile underneath my name, and that whenever I went to networking events or whenever I met somebody on Twitter that I just clicked with and they responded, or if I had somebody talk to me on LinkedIn or if I read an article that they wrote on LinkedIn, I would then connect with them on my personal Facebook page. So I've got about 700 people, friends, that I've connected with on Facebook. And most of these individuals I've had something to do with them, whether it be a Skype call, a telephone call. I've talked to them and they've rung me up about business on the phone. We've had some sort of friendly connection, and then I've gone, okay, let's join each other and keep in touch on Facebook. And even in groups, like if I meet somebody in the Facebook group and we have a conversation and I help them or they help me, I will then invite them, "Hey, why don't you become my friend on Facebook?" So these individuals that I have on my Facebook, even though I may not see them all the time or some of them I might not have met personally, you've already got that relationship there where you have a digital friendship. And it was through growing this friendship and I've always been a very upbeat, very positive person. I don't tend to rant or be negative whatsoever. So I feel that because I was in a genuinely dark place and I was finding it very hard to cope, being able to put a call out to these individuals who already knew me, be it digitally or in person or through a phone call, they knew what I was as a person. And so it just meant a lot to me that they had that kindness and the empathy to go, well, Amanda really needs our help. Let's give her some support, whether it be a phone call, whether it be from Skype. So it's not just from one avenue. These are real people. And rather than just deal on a business level, I've also chosen and they've chosen to connect with me on a personal level on my personal Facebook profile.
That's great. Now, you were actually growing your business when your husband's parents' health deteriorated and you were very, very close to them, and it must have been really, really difficult to know exactly what to do, because on one hand you've got not only your husband and your children that you're taking care of and you're running that part of your personal life, but you've also got your business over here, which is pretty full on. You actually run four businesses, so that is absolutely huge. Plus, you've just gotten into the social media world, and then you get this bombshell out of the blue. Take us through how it all unfolded and how you've come out of it so brilliantly. Because this was your golden moment now, when a few years ago things were pretty awful.
Well, basically what had happened was I had taken on more duties than I really could have at the time. I was really overstretched. I was probably sleeping about 3 hours a day just to keep on top of everything that needed to be done for the family and for the businesses. I also had started as a CFO in a new startup with three pretty awesome individuals. And I ended up saying and making a decision that I'd give the venture 6 months. So we had started that and it was really exciting and I was loving the work. But then my husband wasn't happy. He was finding it really hard to cope with me being so busy. And at that point in time, I wasn't aware of the fact that my in-laws' health was deteriorating because they hid that from me. And he was aware there was something not quite right. So it ended up being an easy decision for me, a difficult decision for my companions to say, look, family first. And I resigned in my position as a director and the CFO of that particular startup venture to focus and give more time to my family, because in reality, in the first 6 months, I think I spent something like 200 to 300 hours of time with no pay to help get this up and started. So that was the first thing that happened. That was the first chip into working out and decreasing what I was doing. And the next step was that Ray's mother ended up being in hospital, and she was getting in and out of hospital. And my sister-in-law works full-time as a nurse, and my husband was the main breadwinner, and I was supplementing his income and our investments with what I was doing. So we could live off his income it wouldn't be as easy, but it was fine. We could do that. So we made the decision that for his sister and his sake, I would scale back my own business so that I could focus more on taking both parents to the hospital, to the doctors, to help them around the house, to do cooking with my sister-in-law. So then I had to take a good hard look at my business. Now, my bookkeeping business at that point in time was very successful, but I wasn't loving bookkeeping. In fact, I really didn't like being a bookkeeper. In some situations with some clients, they would push me so hard, I would have to excuse myself a few times through the day to be physically ill. So it made me reassess my values, and as Chris Wilderbaugh would say, what is your why? And I made the decision that I didn't need this in my life, that I needed to have and reserve my energy for my family. So I gradually started cutting back on customers. Now, I'd already started doing this process when I was in the startup because I had to find time. So I would get rid of any customers that wouldn't pay me. Customers that didn't treat me with respect, they were very diplomatically moved on. And then as Ray's parents needed my help more, then I had to become even more genuine with my decision making. And that's where I scaled my business back and basically culled 70% of my bookkeeping business and kept about 10 clients who I loved working with. And this allowed me to be able to retain enough Baz and enough hours to be a Baz agent, but also freed up a lot of time that I could take Ray's parents to doctor's appointments, hospital appointments, pop into their home on a regular basis, help them out where they needed to be helped out, do shopping if it was required, and whatever else they would let me do. And it also then made me reassess my processes. So that's when I made sure that I looked at digital and paperless options so that I could streamline and save time administrative. And I also found VAs over in Jamaica through Fiverr.com, where they were a very affordable price for a four-hour block. And I started doing videos and I started cookie cutting different administrative things that I do myself to free up even more time. So it ended up being quite a gradual process to be able to get to a point where I could prioritize my family as number one and everything else had to take second place.
So you're saying you pretty much, let me just recap. So you pretty much got rid of the people who were pretty much dragging your business down anyway. So that was a nice little bonus that you could, people who were not paying you, you weren't spending time chasing them up or going after them. You then got, as a result, you then also got to spend more time with your husband's parents. And you also began then to really focus on your business in terms of streamlining and automating it. So you've...
That's right.
Yeah. So you've basically, when something as devastating as what you've gone through has happened, it's actually spurred you into action to do what a lot of business people probably take years to do, if ever, that they actually go, I need to streamline and I need to automate. So they know they need to do all those things that you did, because we hang on to those customers that are really not the right fit for us just because we think, oh, well, you know, they're bringing in the money, or they're, you know, I don't want to turn someone away or whatever. So you actually had some silver linings in such a sad time for business-wise.
Yeah, I think, I guess it depends. Like, I mean, while I did all that, to be honest, I was in quite a dark place. Like, a lot of dear friends who mean a lot to me, I ended up crawling into my dark hole. I wasn't able to really get out very much and talk to people. That was just too much. So I had to compartmentalize my energy levels. And I think what people need to realize, to be successful at anything in life, you really can only have three things. And I remember a psychologist in a podcast explaining all this. And as entrepreneurs, if we want to succeed and move forward, we need to prioritize what our three things are. And in that situation, because my family needed me, they were my first of three. Then with my business, well, I needed that for the income, and also I needed to run my student accommodation business. So that was a priority. I couldn't change that. But it allowed me to prioritize on it by streamlining the processes. So I focused on making long processes that would normally take me a lot of time, I streamlined them. And then the third point was I then had to delegate because I recognized I couldn't do everything on my own behalf. So it was family, it was business. And then I guess the third one was looking at streamlining and anything else I couldn't do, I had to delegate. And I think that, you know, it's in some respects, I look back and I think, how crazy was I? I really should have done this earlier. But sometimes it takes a tragedy or it takes a shock for you to sit down and reassess your life to say, right, this is not living. I need to do something about what I'm doing. And look, I'm not saying I'm perfect because at that point in time, they were my priority and I made sure that everything I did was focused around my in-laws and doing whatever I could to support my children and my husband and his sister and his parents. But I think we all need to realize, and I noticed just recently, is that you can get back into a rut where you start running yourself into the ground again, and that's when you need either yourself to examine your calendar and say, well, why are you doing this? Or with me, again, I have a fantastic Facebook community where a good friend didn't let me get away with anything, and she made me stop and she said, what is your why? And I'm really, really very grateful to Chris Riedelbaugh that she has such a friendship with me that she can just sort of make me stop and think. And I think that's what we all need to do as businesses. We need to have those connections that make us answerable for what we do. They make us stop and think and reflect. Or we have a mentor, or we have I'm a little bit adverse to business coaches because I think there's a lot of business coaches. But I think if you can find a business mentor who is where you want to be and you have them to make you accountable for your goals, then you will achieve many of the goals that you set out in a year. And leading into 2017, I think we all need to take time during the holiday period, not just to spend time with our family, but we also need to set aside an afternoon or a day where we sit down and reflect on 2016 and really, really analyze how we're going to make 2017 a much better year from the point of view our personal growth, our spirituality, our health, and also our business. Because one thing I've learned from this experience of being in the depths of darkness, of being in grief, I could not cope with friends. So I had three things: my family, my business, and streamlining. I didn't have any room in my heart or in my emotional point of view to have friendships. It was just too much for me. And I think that we need to work out what our priorities, what are our three most important things, and then we need to sit down and reflect on our businesses to ensure that they complement our life. Because if we have good friends and we have a life and if we have a good relationship with our family, then all of this reflects into our business, because our business is a living, breathing, growing thing. And whether we want to admit it or not, if our business is failing, quite often it's because we're failing ourselves. And for us to have a successful business, to be a successful entrepreneur, you need to make sure that you're a successful individual inside, because your business will reflect who you are regardless of whether you like it or not.
Wow, that's really powerful. And that is something to definitely reflect on. And I'm sure that a lot of listeners out there will be doing exactly that. Now, you were in a really, really dark place, and I fully understand when you say, you know, you've got beautiful friends around you and people who want to help you, but you just can't, you don't have the energy or the inclination to get out there and be with them or even talk to them on some days. I get that. How do you work through, you know, when a tragedy happens and or something so awful in your life, that you are in a dark hole and you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, no matter how positive you are, how do you actually get through that? How did you work through all of that? Because you're an amazing, beautiful, strong, happy person. nobody would ever in a million years guess that you've been through what you went through. So how did you come out on the other side?
Okay, well, the first thing is what a lot of people don't realise is that in my family, suicide runs in the family. So we have, I've lost two beautiful individuals in my family through suicide. So our family is very aware of the dangers of depression. And when I talk about depression, it means I just want to kill myself kind of depression. And I know I've been there before. Like when I was younger, first married, we had multiple miscarriages, one after the other. And one very tragic circumstance was I was 16 weeks pregnant with multiple babies. I didn't know that at the time. And I remember sitting on the table. It was probably about eight months, if that, from my previous miscarriage with twins. And I knew I was going to lose another pregnancy and the doctor wouldn't do a DNC. And I knew if I didn't have one, I would quite likely not have children at all ever because there was something really wrong happening. I knew intuitively. So what I learned from that experience was that you need to focus on the task at hand. So for me, the task at that point in time was not grief. It was, okay, if I don't get a DNC and convince this doctor to do what needs to be done, I may not have children again. So that was my focus. I focused on the logical side, I guess. That's how I cope. And then once the event was over and I found out all the facts and then I was pregnant with my first son, I had another miscarriage. I lost his twin. Now, I guess a lot of people and a lot of my family members were very concerned about my emotional stability if I had lost a third miscarriage in a row. But I focused on the fact that, you know, I was still young, I was still able, and there was always an opportunity. And when I found out that I was carrying my son and everything was okay, well, then I just forgot about the grief and the pain that I'd experienced before and focused on that. But again, I had good friends. I had supportive family. I had a very supportive Christian community that was there for me, that if I needed to talk, they were there for me. So the number one step, I think, is to understand yourself, know yourself. If you are in a point where you're really dark, know yourself well enough to say, right, I need help. And at that point in time, the way I seeked help was I had older individuals who had children. They become very close to me and they supported me and they listened to me. And that gave me an opportunity to be able to talk about my grief, even though they may not have understood. So talking about it is another really big thing. If you can't talk about people, then blog about it, write about it is something that I see a lot of other people do. Find an outlet. And for me, if I can't talk, I have a journal. So I'll literally sit there and I will write and I will write and I write. And then when I'm happy with the result and I feel that lift, I'll actually grab that book and burn it. And by burning it, it's a symbolism to me that I've dealt with it and it's time to move on. When it came to raise parents, because they were more than just parents, they were my support network. And I never realized until I lost both of them in a 6-month period how much they meant to me when it came to support. So for me, it was like I had to find a new way of getting support. So I get a lot of energy from reverting into myself. So that's what I did. I isolated myself for a time and then I reevaluated my circumstances. And reflection works well for me. I do a lot of writing in a journal. And a lovely soul on Facebook who's a counsellor and psychologist reached out to me and said to me, look, I really feel you need to talk to somebody. And so she had two sessions with me where we chat and she helped me evaluate things and understand why I was grieving to the extent that I was. And even though I would not recommend just two, if anyone is in a similar circumstance, they should definitely look at having much more assistance. But because she'd started me on that journey of looking at things from a different perspective, I was then able to very slowly start crawling out of my hole. And that's where patience is needed. I think all too often, particularly if we're high achievers, we don't allow ourselves the time to grieve. And grief is not just a week or 6 months or 1 year or 2 years. We all cope with grief from a different perspective. And I have to be honest, it wasn't until November of last year that I finally felt like the grief, which hung around me like a fog, had finally started to lift. And it's only now that I can actually talk about this without bawling my heart out and crying. So knowing yourself is extremely important. Knowing who you can trust and talking to them and having their support is extremely important. The next one is patience. You need to be patient and kind with yourself and allow yourself the necessary time to take those steps or to crawl that wall and just let yourself take however long it is to be able to start to feel normal again. And the last bit I call embracing life and celebrating, because, you know, at the end of the day, how blessed you are to love someone so much that you feel so much grief. Like, grief is part of life. And if you can love people to the extent that you miss them to such a great extent that you feel grief, well, that's a blessing. And it's a blessing that you shouldn't deny. And so it gives you that ability to be able to go, okay, what can I do? And it also makes you think, well, what do I want to be left behind? Like, do I want to have people miss me to the same extent I miss my parents? So it gives you an opportunity to say, okay, well, would people miss me? And if you think that they wouldn't, well, then you have this beautiful gift, this wonderful opportunity to say, okay, so this is the end result. I would love people to miss me to the same extent I've missed my parent-in-laws. So how can you be a better person? How can you serve people more in your business so that you're valuable and you give them something that is highly appreciated by them? How can you serve your family and spend time with them so that they know they're loved? How can you spend quality time with your friends where you might not be with them all the time, but when you're with them, you put that phone down and you don't worry about your emails and you just give your whole attention and time to them, be it half an hour or 2 hours. It's all about them. And if you can focus away from yourself and come out of grief being a better person, then it ends up being a great blessing. And that's how I got out of my darkness.
Wow. That is really, really powerful. And I love your steps. And I'm just going to go through them again for anyone who missed them. Because I feel that your steps, especially the last couple, are just really important for anyone who is in a dark place. So the first step was understand yourself. And your second step was to talk or write or blog about your grief. And I really loved then that one of the symbolic things you did was you burnt your book, because then you knew that all of that was dealt with and you could move on. You also said to talk to somebody that you trust and who is going to support you. And that is so important, because at the end of the day, when you're in a really bad place and it's, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning and you're just thinking, you know what, would I be missed? Should I even be here? Knowing that you have somebody there that you can call on, or someone who has your back, someone who is there for you unconditionally, can just be that turning point. I love that you say be patient and be kind with yourself, because when you try and rush getting over something, there is nowhere where it actually says, look, grief stops after 6 weeks. And like you said, it doesn't have to be 6 weeks, 6 days, 6 months. Grief could go on for a much longer period than that or a shorter period than that. And every single person and every single circumstance is different. So it is so important to be kind to yourself and allow yourself to get over it and gradually come out of that foggy place and move on. And your last point, your last step, embrace life. And one of the things that you wrote to me when we were discussing about you coming on the show was that you said, there is plenty of time to sleep when you're dead. I really resent sleep. There is so much I can do, learn, accomplish and achieve if I didn't have to sleep.
Absolutely.
So I love that. I love that because there is, everyone has 24 hours in a day and it depends on yourself as to how you use them. Now, before we wrap up, Amanda, and it's been an absolute pleasure, as always, talking to you. You have a business ebook and newsletter subscription service. Is that correct?
Yes. It's not quite on my website. I'm just getting my virtual assistant to work that out. But in the next week, it will be in the top right-hand corner. It's a black square. We'll say, please subscribe. And you can put your name and your email. And I will be sending out a newsletter every BAS quarter, where I have a whole heap of helpful tips and tricks for business people to use on a practical level.
So you won't be bombarding people every week and piling up their...
No. If people want to be, if they want to read an article, I do post every Friday. Normally, every Friday you'll see a new blog post, and they're normally something to do for small business, be it about bookkeeping or be about social media or blogging. I post every Friday afternoon.
Great. And so tell us your website address so they know exactly where to go.
So if you go to My Office Books, which is all lowercase and all one word and all normal spelling, so it's myofficebooks.info, I-N-F-O, and that'll take you straight to my homepage where you'll be able to see all that information online.
Excellent. Okay, Amanda, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much for all your information.
You're welcome, Tan. Thanks for the talk.
And that's all we've got time for today. If you have not seen our Coach on Fire radio community on Facebook, we'd love it if you went over and liked our page, gave us a rating review, or just commented. We'd love to get to know you. Come back next fortnight, Brisbane, 9 a.m. Wednesday morning and Tuesday evening for those of you in North America. And that's it from the Go for Gold program with Tan from Oz. Until next time.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.